This is Allison Stanfield with Art Biz Coach. This summer, as those of you listening know, I organized a social media book club around the new biography of Joan Mitchell called Joan Mitchell, Lady Painter, A Life. And I'm really happy to have the author of that book, Patricia Albers, with us today. Hey, Patricia.
Hi, Allison. How are you?
Good, good. We're so glad to have you here. Let me just tell everyone a little bit about you.
Okay.
Patricia is, and you can add whatever you want. This is what I cobbled together. I'm sure there's much more than we have time for on this call, but Patricia is an art historian, author, and curator. Her previous book, Shadows, Fire, Snow, The Life of Tina Madotti, earned a starred review in Publishers Weekly and was named a best book of 1999 by the Library Journal. She also published Tina Madotti and the Mexican Renaissance, the catalog for the exhibition of Madotti's photographs that she co-curated. She's got a way with the women artists. But we're here today to talk about the life of Joan Mitchell. Are you ready to talk about her, Patricia?
I am.
Okay. So what I have here are some questions. I am not used to interviewing an author. And as an author myself of nonfiction, I have some author questions for you too. But I also took some questions from Facebook, from Twitter, that people wrote in, and I've kind of put together a loose outline here. But I think everyone wants to know, why Joan?
Well, for me, Joan Mitchell has been someone I've admired for a very long time, whose work I've admired. I mean, I've known her, I can't remember when I first saw her work, but I've always thought it was terrific. And then, as I say in the introduction, as I was finishing the Madotti book, I happened to come across that one Mitchell painting. It was from the Grand Valais series in Paris, and I found it very moving. It spoke to me. So Joan seemed like a great candidate for my next biography. I also thought she was good because at that point there had been so few biographies of the abstract expressionist women. I mean, there'd been a number about various men, Jackson Pollock in particular, but I thought it'd be interesting to look at one of the women in that movement, and the timing was great because at that point, many of the people who had known Joan well in the 40s and 50s were in their 70s and 80s. I interviewed a number of them. Sadly, many of them have now died. And so it seemed like just the right time to be doing something about Joan. And I knew something about Joan as a person. I you know, as I continued, I was constantly amazed by her. She turned out to be an even more fascinating subject than I had hoped.
So I have forgotten about the encounter with the painting that you wrote about in the introduction, because that was so many pages ago. So I'm glad you mentioned that. I'm glad you mentioned that. We all have those moments with our art and artists. So have you been working on the biography since the late 90s then?
Well, since 2000, that's when I signed the contract. I finished it the first time in 2008, but that was the year that the recession hit, so the decision was made to delay the publication for a while, and then I got back into it in a big way of 2010, and it came out this year.
Well, okay, so here's an author question for you. I know what it's like to birth a book, and I self-published my book, and I know what an ordeal that was, but I also know that when you publish with a publishing house that you're on their schedule. But as an author, does that just wig you out that then you have to wait?
The schedule?
Yeah.
Well, I was very fortunate. I had an editor who believes that books take as long as they take. So she was understanding of my need to keep at it until I felt I had it right.
So even though the publishing house put the kibosh on it in 2008, you kept working on it?
Well, they just said, let's delay the publication. This isn't a good time to come out with a book about a painter. You know, big book about a painter. It's the timing just isn't right.
So I guess my question is, did you think of that as like, okay, there's extra time, I can change this in it, or it's done? It's totally done.
No, I did some of that. You know, once you're in a book, I mean, I'm sure you know this too. It's there. It's with you day and night, and you're always thinking about it in some way. You read something or you see something, and you think, how does that relate to Joan? So it's always there.
Okay. All right. Well, so since you brought up and I pronounced her name wrong. I've always pronounced her name wrong, I guess. Madoti book?
Yes.
Yes. So, do you see similarities, parallels in their lives with her life with Jones?
Oh, well, they were very different personalities. I guess I see a certain commonality in the fact that they were both driven. In the case of Madoti, she ended up putting photography aside to work for what she thought of as the cause, do her politics. She was a communist. In the case of Joan, she was, you know, very much focused her entire life on painting. But both of them. You know, believed in something that was bigger than themselves, and went at it. And both of them were sort of proto-feminists, I guess I would say. Neither of them thought of herself as a feminist, and yet they were both strong, independent women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, I see another book club going on with your first book. So that's always nice. Well, what another thing that's kind of fun is, 2 years ago when I started doing this, I think it may have been 3 years ago when I did my first one, that was on the de Kooning biography.
Oh, yes.
And so it was fun to, after reading your book, go back and look at the index and look how Mitchell appeared in the de Kooning biography, which isn't much, but it still was interesting because it was at the same time and the same characters come up. The cedar comes up and all that stuff.
Yes.
So the club, all that. So that's kind of fun. So if you all listening haven't read the de Kooning book, it's a nice parallel in time with this
one. It's a wonderful book.
It's a wonderful book, yes. Okay, so here's a question that it didn't even dawn on me till I'm like halfway through the book. You call her Joan throughout the book.
Yes.
Instead of Mitchell.
Yes.
And all the characters. Is this a trend in biographies? I mean, I know that I don't think the Bill de Kooning book did that, but I could be wrong. It was interesting because there's so many characters in the book, and I love the way that you use their first names because it makes you feel close to them. Like,
right.
We're in the same. It's much more personal and less academic. Then
yes,
yes. The other, and I assume that's one reason for doing it. Yes.
Well, that's an interesting question. I don't remember either if he's called Bill or de Kooning, and I don't know if it's a trend. Possibly, but in the case of my book, you know, that seems like a natural thing for a biographer, or at least in this case, to do, as long as you're calling, you know, you're speaking of Joan, but then you're also speaking of Michael Goldberg, her longtime lover and colleague. I mean, as long as there's a kind of parallel approach to the various characters, it makes sense to me to do that in a biography.
Right. I enjoyed it, and I did feel close to them, but I'll tell you, after a while, there's so many characters that come in and out of her life that I didn't know how to look them up in the index because they were first name. There needs to be a first name index somewhere.
Yes,
but
I should
have been paying better attention. But I found myself at first reading like 10 pages at a time, which is almost like starting over every time you read it. And so when I finally buckled down and really like spent a day reading most of the book, it was much easier to keep track of everyone. So,
Oh, that's good. Well,
yeah.
Joan did know everyone.
She did. She did. This is, I mean, the what cracked me up was the description of the dinner parties with the circus performers and the NASCAR drivers and or well, they're not, they weren't NASCAR drivers at the time. They were whatever they call them in Europe. It just sounds like a wonderful coterie of people.
Well, she loved that community of feeling, as she called it, and that was one of the things that attracted her to being part of that abstract expressionist group. It was almost a family, and one which, when it functioned best, was one in which people helped each other.
Yeah. So did she feel the same way about Jean-Paul's community of different non-artists?
She was more of an outsider there.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
But she really wanted that relationship to work, so
yeah.
she tried her best.
Yeah, there was another biography, and it was interesting to read about him too, because I haven't. I used to work for a museum that had a wonderful Riopelle in the collection, and but I didn't know much about his work, and so it was fun to look him up online and get more into his character too. I'm not sure I
You
would
know, it's
have
it.
wanted to know
Sorry.
him. I'm not sure I would have
Well,
wanted to know him.
I just wanted to say I was just responding to your knowing about Riopelle. That's sort of unusual because
Yeah.
in this country he's so little known. In Canada, his name is a household word. I mean, everyone knows Riopelle in Canada.
It sounds like there's a Riopelle national holiday in Canada
Well,
somewhere.
almost.
But no, the only reason is because he was in an important collection in our museum, which was the collection of the Washington Gallery of Modern Art from the defunct Washington, D.C. Gallery. And
Okay.
I was the curator of that collection. So that's the only reason that I was introduced to his work. And I never was a fan, gotta say.
Yes.
Never appreciated that piece. Anyway, that's what, but everyone has their own. And actually, I'll tell you this, one of the reasons I wanted to read this book, I've never been a fan of Joan Mitchell's work. And I went to the, I'm kind of getting off track here, but I went to the Des Moines Art Center, which is a
Yes.
fabulous museum. Everyone should go out of your way to go there, just for the architecture, but the collection's wonderful. And when I go to museums, I go to see permanent collections. And but there was a Joan Mitchell retrospective there. Oh, this was in the last 8 years, I'm guessing. And I just kind of flew by it because I was so anxious to get to the permanent collection. And now I'm just kind of kicking myself. Ben, I so appreciate her work much more, and it's not because of her biography, but I just spent more time with it, and just looking up the images as the story unfolded. Okay, I digress. We'll get back to that in a
Well,
minute.
I do think it's the kind of work that rewards looking again and again, and it can grow on you.
Absolutely. Oh, I can see that. And even some of the JPEGs are growing on me. I mean, that's not even looking at them in person. There's some that I still, care for less than others, but some of them I'm really excited to see. Okay, so here's someone else that asked, how did you get inside her head? Because it really seems like you are inside her head.
Well, I was fortunate. I mean, I had a lot of time to do this book, and I was fortunate that I had a lot of source material, primary source material, including letters to and from Joan. A number of people gave me letters that Joan had sent them. Her niece showed me a lot of stuff from family collections. Michael Goldberg put a large number of letters from Joan in his archives in the Archives of American Art. And a lot of people, of course, are still around who knew Joan, who could, had maybe taken notes or remembered what she said on a specific occasion. So I called that, and I just, kept peeling the onion, if you will, and, see what I could find and how this statement over here matched that statement over there. And, it's inside her head, this is pretty much Joan talking. And of course, she was so articulate. She was a tremendously good letter writer. Mm-hmm. So that was, that was helpful too. She wrote a lot about her feelings, so I could use then her own statements to, to clarify what was going on in the book.
Yeah, it seems like there were so many sources, and I love the way that the book is organized with references that, if you want to look up something on the page, you're not interrupted by footnotes all the time, but that you can go back to the back and read that, and it's really nice and very clear what each reference refers to back there, because you use the first part of that sentence in it. So you have all these sources, and as we've already noted, there are tons of them. She knew tons of people. How do you organize that? I mean, do you have post-it notes everywhere? Do you have index cards? Is it all computer?
I transcribe the interviews. I make copies, whatever form the various sources take. And then, yes, I have many boxes full of files that I organize in different ways. So I've got a whole section that is a section of exhibition reviews, feature stories, and so forth. I've got other sections that deal with her relationships with specific people. So it's a big organizing job. I have a lot of the stuff on the computer, but not all of it. I kind of like having it in paper form, because then when I'm writing, I can spread this out over the floors, where it usually ends up being, and can kind of, put one thing next to another and use that then as I'm up here, on my computer, writing away.
I just can't. I know what it's like to organize a book, and my book didn't even have characters in it. Really, it has some quotes and some sources, but not nothing like this. And I just can't imagine. So, as someone who has also done some research in the Archives of American Art, I'm curious as to whether will your files end up there.
Oh, my files will end up at the Joan Mitchell Foundation in New York, so they will be available to researchers in the future.
Okay, excellent. So, I didn't even think to ask you about that, but you can mention it later if you want to. I think that I'm curious as to what Joan would think of us talking about her right now. Or having a book club about her.
Well, I don't know. I'm sure she would have opinions as to, she'd have answers to your questions that might be very different from my own in some cases. Joan had mixed feelings about careerism. She painted because she painted. She painted for deeply personal reasons. I mean, painting was really central to her identity. She was not a careerist, except when she was. And so, as I mentioned in the book, she liked having shows, and she knew the right people and so forth. So very ambivalent feelings about that, and I assume that those feelings about a book club would also be rather ambivalent. She'd like it, but she wouldn't, I'm guessing.
My sense is that she would secretly really like it, but she'd say she hated it. It was a terrible idea.
Could be.
This is just me reading into it. And I would want to be the one to tell her, right?
Right.
So when I finish this, so let's talk about her personality for a little bit.
Okay.
I first encountered her personality in Marcia Tucker's book. in her memoir. What's it called? A Short Life.
Yes.
Yeah, one of her. Yeah,
Yes.
I'm gonna be skewered for that, but I had just read that last spring, so it was really wonderful. And then, and it was like, ooh, you know, Joan Mitchell. And then your book came out right as I was reading that one, and I was like, I'm not sure I want to read about her, but I love reading about crusty women. So we just powered forth. But when I finished the book, I felt like one of Joan's victims. Like,
Oh.
I felt like I had been sucked in and and bought the whole story, and she both attracted and repelled me, like the people around her, which I think is kind of brilliant that that happened. Does that make sense? I mean, like I literally,
It
when
does
I
make
was,
sense. It does make sense.
yeah,
And
I.
I was that was a very difficult aspect of doing this book because I would speak to people about a particular, let's say, a particular time in Joan's life, their experiences with her, and I would get such radically different answers to my questions in terms of Joan's personality. Joan was very kind. Joan was a devoted friend. Joan was generous. On the other hand, Joan was horrible. Joan was out of control. So it was, it's hard to bring all those things together and make of her a coherent personality. But that's really kind of the sense I had that she was, she thought of herself as not having a coherent identity in some sense. I mean, it was painting made it all work for her, and I really wanted that to come across.
Well, apparently it did, because that's exactly how I felt. I mean, it was so funny because I'm just at the end, I'm like wanting to look up more about her and wanting to see more, and I'm like, dang, I got sucked in. You know, she's mean. She was mean to people, and I'm still like sucked in there. So how did you feel after living with this personality for so long when you finished the book?
Well, I have tremendous admiration for Joan. I like Joan very much in the sense of I feel a lot of empathy for her. But I certainly she's best admired from a distance.
Yeah, I just recall reading an interview with the actress that played the girl who played with fire and the girl with the dragon
Oh,
tattoo and stuff, and that
yes.
when she was done filming the last episode, and you know, the very, very last of the three, that she went in the other room and threw up. Like she's like,
Oh.
it's like she was throwing up her character, that this gross character that she lived with for so long. And I
Yes.
just thought that was really interesting. And I imagine that, I don't think that that was the case with you, because you had the good and the bad at the same time. And there's obviously a tenderness there. But it just, you know, just getting something out of your system must be kind of interesting.
Well, there's Joan's art, and that's there, and that will endure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Do you keep, just like her, you keep coming back to the art. We overlook that. And I don't know that we do that with men, but do you think we do it more with women? We're less inclined to excuse women for being ballsy and mean?
Well, I think that's part of it. I don't think we'd be talking so much about what a difficult personality she was if she were male, or how much she drank, how promiscuous, and so forth. It's a conversation that we have because she went against the norms for women, I think even today.
Today.
So I do think that's part of it. And people who were her quote victims, I mean there's this sense of yeah, she was nasty, she was difficult, but to some extent anyway it worked. She would force people to sort of face things that maybe they weren't ready to face, but she would let's put it all out there. Let's get to the heart of things. Let's deal with it, and then let's move on. And she felt that she really wanted to live life to its fullest. One of the things that Joan taught me or reminded me of in any case is that you don't want to sleepwalk through life. You want to live to the fullest, and you don't want to seal off any part of yourself. You open yourself up to the world, you open yourself up to loving things, loving people. Half the time they're going to stab you in the back, but that's part of what it means to be alive, really feel living. And I think that's one of the lessons we can take from Joan Mitchell.
But do you think that she really did that? Because to me, it seemed like she was always putting up her guard, like that her meanness and her meanness, so cutting down people and testing them was more like, let me see if you're worthy, if we can, have this conversation, if you're good enough.
Well, she did do that, but I do think she let herself be vulnerable in many ways.
Yeah, and yes, that's obvious, especially in her relationships. Yes, the important relationships.
Absolutely.
So you brought up the promiscuity, and I had a question. It's actually a really good question from someone. It says, if artist Joan Mitchell wanted to be taken seriously, along with the male artists, wouldn't her promiscuity be a strike against her?
Well, male artists were sleeping around too, and at least in her circle, and Joan was going to be one of the boys, and that's what you did. Mm-hmm. You drank a lot, you smoked a lot, you swore, you slept around. You did everything that proper women weren't supposed to do, and that was that was part of being one of the gang.
Yeah, that's another way to look at it. I think this person's looking at it like she objectified herself by doing that.
No, she was. Joan wouldn't see it that way.
No.
Joan was. Joan was. Men are in charge. So, I'm going to do what they do. Kind of run with the pack.
Yeah. So here's another. Here's another question about. It's kind of an author question. I know a lot of us were itching for more images in the book. As
yes.
an author, that you're, when you're dealing with so many works that you want to talk about that are critical to her career, what are you dealing with in order to get permission to use those in your book? Or, how do you pick the works that are in there?
Oh, very hard to pick the works. Of course, I wanted to put everything in, but I wanted to put in primarily major works that I talk about at some length, and hope that people will look at some of the other Joan Mitchell catalogs. I mean, other works are certainly reproduced both in catalogs and also online. So hope that people will then turn to other sources to get what's missing.
Is there anything when you do a book of this magnitude that you can't use? I mean, did you come up across any roadblocks that they didn't want a reproduction in there?
Oh, no. Nobody said you can't reproduce this
okay.
work. It was certainly, getting permissions is certainly a time-consuming and expensive process. So,
yes.
It was quite, I spent the better part of a year getting both print permissions and permission to reproduce images. So it was quite an effort, yeah.
Yeah, I am still, does the Metropolitan still own La Vie en Rose?
Yes, that's it, Metropolitan, yes.
I can't find it anywhere on the line.
Oh.
I'm just looking for it all morning, and I just decide to give up and that it will come to me when it's supposed to.
It's often up. The last time I was at the Metropolitan, it was on the wall.
I can't even find it. I can't find it in their catalog, and then I did the other Anyway, I could just be looking wrong for it and incorrectly for it. And I'm not going to give up though, because now it's one of those things that I got to see, right? It's
Yeah, don't give up. Don't give up.
like,
Best solution is to go to New York and see it
oh,
in
well,
the flesh, of
that would
course.
be the best. Absolutely. Absolutely. I have a couple of questions that came in. Let me see if I can
Okay.
just read them crudely because I haven't read them before. What was it like keeping an unobjective focus and writing a book about someone who was such a difficult person?
So the question is, what was it like keeping
Just
an up?
being neutral, like an
Being
observer.
neutral.
Yeah, being not objective. I mean, actually, it says unobjective, but I think she means objective.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think part of a biographer's job is to be skeptical. Be skeptical of what people say about themselves, be skeptical of what people say about other people. So, kind of trying to look at things from many different points of view. And I think that process then leads you to try to, come at things from one angle, often come at things from another angle. So, I mean, and certainly with Joan, there was a lot of material on, people had a lot to say on all sides of the issue here, the issue of her personality and so forth. So that worked out. I mean, I didn't fall in love with Joan in the sense of, certainly didn't want to write a hagiography, just all praise all the time. I think she deserves better than that. She'd want a tough biographer, and I think that she deserves one.
Yes. Yeah. I think you just kind of nailed it when you said, like, you're dealing with the positives and the negatives of a personality, and so it's pretty easy to wind up in the middle when there's so many different sides to the story, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you want to look at things, sort through things, and as I say, be skeptical. I mean, there are people forget on purpose. People tell stories about it. We all do. We all have a narrative of our own lives, and there's always other points of view. And that's one of the great things about writing biography, I think, is to, I love this fact that when you go back to some of these primary sources, you go back and you find somebody's letters or you find somebody's diary, and often the primary sources clarify things, but at the same time complicate things. Things stories get smoothed over with the years, and it's fascinating to go back and try to get primary sources that make things always more ambivalent, always more, mysterious in a sense, at the same time as they give you more information.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see how biographers of the future deal with email and
Oh,
social
yeah.
media resources and all that stuff, because in a sense there's more correspondence, but it's not, I don't know. It was fun to go in and read letters in the archives.
Yes,
It's
it's
there's
wonderful.
nothing like that. Even if they're on microfiche, which I'm sure they're not anymore, but when I did, they were.
Yes.
So just kind of, I guess I would be skewered if I didn't ask you this. So what's up with the lady painter in the title?
Oh, that's a good question. So, Lady Painter, as I say in the book, was a phrase that was used to describe Joan's mother back in Chicago. As she was a lady poet in the 30s and so forth. So Joan grew up hearing that phrase, and Joan herself, of course, had these experiences that related to gender. I mean, the fact of her father telling her she'd always be second rate because she was a girl. Joan got to New York and finds that the art world there is very much a man's club. So she dealt with that not by being complaining, but by being sort of tough and ironic and scrappy. And so I think her use of this phrase is very revealing of who Joan was. It's a kind of typical Mitchell way of coping. So you know, it's a bit of a risky title. I certainly don't want it to be understood as lady in the sense of, you know, the aristocratic lady,
right,
because it's lady in the sense of, you know, a lady. And it's also somewhat close to the much disliked and with good reason phrase woman artist. But Joan takes that phrase and kind of turns it and uses it in a different direction. And I think it tells you something about who she was.
Well, I think it's quite appropriate after reading the book. I think it's quite appropriate. When I first saw it, I was like, what's up with that?
Yeah.
So, but when you read it, it's just how she referred to it. So it's kind of perfect. Anyway, what else, before I ask you about your current project, what else do you want us to know about Joan? Or, I mean, we've read the book, so we know a lot about Joan, but I guess we just want to remind people to go back to the art.
I think that's it. I think that the next step, I hope that many people would take, is to go to museums and look at her work, experience her work, because, as I say in the introduction, I mean, until you've seen it in the flesh, you haven't really seen it. And her work is in the collections of most major American museums. It's not that hard to find. And it's, you know, as I said, it's really very richly rewarding. So I hope people would just, you know, spend some time with her work and, you know, feel it for themselves.
Absolutely. Okay, so my last question is, someone wants to know if you are working on another woman artist biography.
I am working on a biography of a male artist this time.
Okay, you want to tell us about it?
A photographer, actually, by the name of André Kertész, who was a Hungarian-born photographer, became famous in Paris in the 1920s and 30s, and ended up living in New York, working in New York for about 50 years. So a marvelous photographer, arguably the outstanding modernist photographer of the 20th century. His name is not hugely familiar to people, and yet his images are. So I'm sure many of the listeners have seen the satiric dancer, for example, or his image of a fork, or his image of Mondrian studio. So I'm really excited about this this new book. The work is terrific, and I just got started. So more to come.
So yeah, that's a ways away, huh?
Yes.
So it's, for those of you listening, it's Kertész. It's Kertesz with the accent aigu over the second E.
That's it.
So excellent. Well, yeah, we'll go look up. I'm familiar with his name and some of his images, but now I want to know more, of course. So thank you so much for joining us today, Patricia.
Thank you, Allison. It's been a pleasure.
I am just, it's just been a nice, light summer reading.
Yes.
Not at all. But it's just been so rewarding. And for those of you who haven't finished or read the book yet, I do hope that you'll do that. Read Joan Mitchell, Lady Painter, A Life, because it really is rewarding. And you'll feel that kind of push-pull with the subject and the wonderful job that Patricia did in bringing her to life. So I hope to see you all on Twitter and on the ArtBiz blog. For now, goodbye to all. This is Allison Stanfield with ArtBiz Coach.